The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Community Garden Revolution. I'm Mary Hugel, the show host, and we're very pleased to have a special guest with us today. We're starting up the new year with them again, and it's always my pleasure to talk with Sue Locke, who is the Director and Corporate and Community Partnership person or spokesperson for the Scotts Miracle-Gro folks. It's the Scotts Miracle-Gro Company. They're in Marysville, Ohio. And she is ready to tell us about an announcement that they have for this year for your grants that you can apply. And Sue, welcome aboard again to Community Garden Revolution.
Well, Mary, good morning and Happy New Year to you and all your listeners as well.
Well, Happy New Year to you, lady. I appreciate your time today. And you've got a really exciting announcement for folks who are looking for grant money, and they're all looking for money and volunteers. So what do you have for us that you're getting ready to help out people this spring?
Oh, great. Well, we're very excited to announce our pollinator promise. So when you think about pollinators, whether they are bees, butterflies, or birds, these are all important to our ecosystem. They're critical to our planet's food supply, and they really play a key role in the health of millions of flowering gardens across the country. So Scotts Miracle-Gro, we launched Pollinator Promise, which is a year-long effort to improve consumer education about pollinators, and secondly, to promote the creation of backyard and urban habitats that will attract pollinators.
Mm-hmm. And what is it that you're going to be doing for these folks if they apply for grants? How much money can they go for? Can you give us the grant process, how this is going? Like if I was in Tennessee and I wanted to go ahead and find what grants were available for me to help out my community garden, first of all, where do I go for a website? And then what do I find?
Well, two things about our Pollinator Promise program is that education is really key. So we've created a new website, and it's scottsmiraclegrow.com/pollinatorpromise. And on that site, you can find information on, you know, how to create really simple pollinator habitats in your backyard. There's also videos about pollinators and also fun facts and also information about different pollinator organizations across the country. And the second component is when we say we want to promote the creation of backyard habitats, we know that grants are very, and funding is important to that. So just this Monday, we opened up the window for our Grow 1000 Grassroots Grant Program. And organizations throughout the United States can apply for those grants if they go to grow1000.com, and that's G-R-O and the number 1000.com. And there's information about the grants and how to apply. And the Grow 1000 program, we started that in 2011. So this year, for 2016, there's just more of a focus around pollinators. You know, here at Scotts, we've you know, always promoted the creation of gardens and green spaces, you know, which attract pollinators naturally. So again, this year, it's, you know, emphasizing those who want to help bring more pollinator habitats to life.
Okay, when I go to the website, and I'll tell you, I'm right now at the scottsmiraclegrow.com /pollinator promise, and it is very festive looking, very colorful. People will like the pictures that you have displayed on here, and you've got the little prompts there where it says plant a garden, then you've got apply for a grant, and another prompt where it says support a group. Okay, when I go to try to find out how much money that you're doing for a grant, because sometimes people go for certain size grant monies, how much are you giving per garden?
Well, with the Grow 1000 grants, the dollar amounts are $1,500 and $500. And it will be based on a judging criteria. So, again, we're encouraging all groups to go and apply. And the application process is open through February 22nd.
Okay. And on that, how long does it take you? Okay, so if I go ahead and get the application in by the 22nd of February, how long does it take you to go ahead and say, yes, you're the group that we're going to help out?
Well, we're going to be announcing the winners for 2016 on the first day of spring, which is March 21st.
Oh, how wonderful. That's not too far away. That's great. Okay.
Exactly. And, you know, again, we're excited to, you know, encourage different groups, nonprofits to apply. And, again, our way of supporting more pollinators being created, you know, whether it's in a suburban environment or maybe an urban setting, you know, groups can really create pollinators wherever they live.
And you're partnering evidently with the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and I don't know who the Pollinator Stewardship Council is, and then also the Franklin Park Conservatory, would that be right?
That's
and others
correct.
To there's, do this.
There's so many different groups who are really helping, you know, create, you know, more pollinators. So whether it's the Pollinator Stewardship Council, Monarch Joint Venture, the Million Pollinator Garden Challenge, Franklin Park, as you mentioned, you know, all of these groups really see the importance and critical role that pollinators play in our ecosystem. And with Grow 1000, we've been working with the U.S. Conference of Mayors, Franklin Park Conservatory, as you mentioned, the Garden Writers Association, and also the National
Good.
Garden Association.
Good. Yeah, I like the Garden Writers Association. Plant a row for the hungry is their pitch. on the pollinators, please tell the importance. We hear a lot about bees and wanting to have the butterflies there and so on. That. Why is that important in our ecosystem?
Well, when you think about it, with the pollinators, just say in the U.S. alone, the pollination of bees and other insects produces about $40 billion worth of products annually. I mean, think about that. And, you know, we know that, you know, birds, bees, and butterflies, you know, they're busying transferring pollen, but that's more than 200,000 flowering plant species that need pollination. Mm. And so, you know, these pollinators, I mean, they're hard workers. Really.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
When you think about it, they are helping with our food supply. And so we need to help the pollinators find their own food supply. And that's done through creating these habitats. And it's really easy and simple to do. You know, you don't need a lot of space. Again, if you go to scotchmiraclegrow.com/pollinator promise, there's videos and tips where families can start a project with their kids, and just more details on how easy it is to create a space for pollinators.
So this could be a garden, home garden, and or it could be the nonprofit groups then, the community gardens?
Where you're talking about
staying with
you're talking about the grants?
Right.
Okay, for the grants, again, more detailed information is on the website about who's eligible, but we're looking at nonprofit groups. But if you are a homeowner and you have kids and you want to have a weekend project, you know, go to Pollinator Promise website and you can find information on how to create a habitat in your own backyard.
Mm-hmm. And on this, are you all concerned with the part that with the population getting so large coming up, we're talking about another 1 or 2 billion people in the world, are you concerned, and that's why you're doing it now, about the possibility that, hey, we're not going to have enough bees down the road, or is it something that you just want to make sure the ecosystem is flowing right as the growth is happening with all these people that's coming on, you know, in our world?
Well, I think, you know, we all know that pollinators, as I said earlier, Mary, they're just important. You know, they're important, again, to our food population. And, you know, we all love flowers and gardens. And this is, you know, our way of helping cities and communities, you know, increase these habitats to attract these hard workers in nature.
Mm-hmm. Right. I was just curious because some of the other nations, they're trying to adjust to the amount of food that they're starting to grow and change around or increase what they're growing to eat. And so I was just curious because there's a lot of different groups that are starting these pollinator programs or bees programs, And I'm just curious that are they thinking about the trajectory of the amount of people that's going to be on the world and concerned ahead of time that, hey, we need to make sure the ecosystem is working now. And then, of course, as it grows, that we keep that in balance. That's, I guess, what I was wondering because there's so much interest in it right now.
You know, that might be the case, Mary. I think for us at Scotts, you know, along with the other partner groups that we mentioned before, you know, we just realized that the pollinators, they're just very critical and how mm-hmm. we can do our part, you know, to help increase their populations.
Oh, definitely. Most definitely. And again, give us the website that people can go to.
Okay, sure. So it's scottsmiraclegrow.com/pollinator promise. And mm-hmm. also to apply for the grants, go to grow1000.com. And that's G-R-O, the number 1000. And the grant application window opened this Monday, and it runs through February 22nd.
Wonderful. I'm excited that more people are doing something like this because you see more restaurants that are jumping on board with this. And I was very surprised that even golf courses are doing this. They have the space, and they're wanting to try to help save bees and bring butterflies to their golf courses. And they're even selling the honey when they process it. I think that's fascinating. But what do you think with the weather and the climate, if you can say something about that, what do you think about this climate change thing that's happening? And, of course, I know I'm from the Midwest. You're from the Midwest. We see a lot of change. Like last year, it was a whole month before we could really plant our seeds and because of so much rain that we had. What do you all project or see as far as people being able to still grow their own community gardens or their own gardens? I know that community gardens is needed because of the mission and the purpose that they help with the hungry, and also for people for activity to cut down obesity and diabetes and also give them physical activity. But with the climate changing so much, with so much rain, so much heat toward the very end of the season, do you feel it's going to be even more of a challenge as we go along for people to even grow something outside?
I think, you know, with community gardens, they have just had a surge in popularity. You know, more people are interested in eating healthy, growing their mm-hmm. own food. And for us, in partnership with Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens, we here in Central Ohio have seen an uptick in gardens, and also mm-hmm. on a national basis, as we work with different organizations through our Grow 1000 program, we've seen mm-hmm. more and more people getting into urban agriculture, again, realizing the benefits of eating healthy, eating local. So I think that, you know, once the season, you know, breaks wherever you are, you know, if you're in the Midwest and it's a little bit colder, you know, gardening is still going to be very popular. But also we're seeing more people growing indoors as well, too. And, you know, mm-hmm. you don't always need, you know, a huge plot to grow your vegetables. You can do things with container gardens. Or you might have just, if you're in an urban setting, you can have some pots out on your terrace to grow some tomatoes mm-hmm. or whatever it might be. But also, as I mentioned, indoor gardening is becoming, you know, more and more popular, too. So I think people, if they realize that, you know, they want to eat healthy and garden, they'll find a way. And we want to be able to help them.
I think so, too. Have you ever heard of it being called a regenerative garden? And what that means is that it's when they grow items, like you said, in the container gardens, that it helps change the climate control in their own backyard because it, you know, releases more oxygen or whatever. But there's four senators. There's Senator Kelly Aoutte, is A-Y-O-T-T-E in New Hampshire, Lamar Alexander from Tennessee, Mark Kirk from Illinois, and Lindsey Graham. They are putting together a coalition for Republicans to talk about pro-environmental policies and enlist more of the GOP senators to support them. And they're looking for ideas of what people can do to, you know, grow gardens or gardening or other ways that they can help change the environment. And I think it's exciting that at least somebody is talking as a senator, whether it's a congressman or senator. They had a bill from Florida last year that didn't go too far because it really was simplistic in nature. to try to do an experiment to send funds for what you do with community gardens. But again, it was so simplistic, it didn't go anywhere off the floor. But I think it's exciting, as you say, that there's more community gardens happening. There's more groups that are trying to do something with their missions to help other people and also themselves eat locally too. So what do you project that's coming up? You know, something's got to happen because we have to start feeding ourselves more locally with the problems that we're seeing with hazardous waste from other nations that are even admitting that they're having problems with the ground. What do you project that we're possibly going to be seeing in the next 2-3 years about community gardens? I feel that there's going to be a synergy and we're going to see even more community gardens.
Well, you know, through our Grow 1000 program, which, you know, is now in its sixth year, we have supported a little over 680 projects. And with
Great.
Grow 1000, the intent of that program is by 2018, which is Scotts Miracle-Gro's, we'll be celebrating our 150th anniversary. We will have
yeah.
supported at least 1,000 gardens, green spaces here in the U.S., Canada, and Europe. So that's the broader program. But I use that as an example, is that, you know, over the years, you know, the different groups that we've worked with, the different cities, the different mayors, community gardening and the idea of, you know, greening green spaces, providing, you know, more access to residents, it's important. And I think that it has become much more critical of an issue for cities and neighborhoods across our country. So to answer mm-hmm. your question, Mary, I think we will just be seeing more of an urgency and the importance of, you know, having these natural environments available to citizens.
Oh, yes. In large cities, and I don't know what they're doing in Cleveland or Cincinnati, but St. Louis, Nashville, Chicago, of course, has done it for years, Washington, D.C., New York, they're using their skyscrapers. And if the engineers find it's okay to do it, they're doing these rooftop gardens, and they are growing at a great rate because they lose ground in these inner city spaces that they go ahead and it's blighted, and they try to help it out with having a community garden. And then they find that the developers are going, well, you know, that area is not so bad after all. Let's go ahead and develop something there. And then they lose their community gardens. So some of them, are, like St. Louis, they're taking the attitude that, hey, we're not going through all that. We're going to go ahead and look for these tall buildings and build community gardens up there instead. Now, California goes through a lot of that. They lose a lot of community gardens every so often. But St. Louis has just taken the idea that, hey, we're not going to fight that in the inner city. We're just going to go ahead and do that. Have you found that there's a little bit more excitement in your all's area for doing rooftop gardening?
We've worked with a lot of different organizations that are creating rooftop gardens. But when you're talking about urban revitalization, mm-hmm. there were several projects that we worked on last year where in West Sacramento was the one that comes to mind. They mm-hmm. had very successfully taken an area that it was an abandoned gas station. And within literally, I think, a matter of months, they've turned it into one of the most successful and largest community gardens in West Sacramento. And
Great.
it's in a very prominent intersection. And there are so many groups who have supported that. And it's the sustainability of these projects that's really important. And
right.
so we're seeing groups who are backing this and supporting it. And through, you know, our support, through Grow 1000, which also provides, you know, monetary and also products to help these gardens, you know, thrive and grow. But, you know, we're seeing so many different creative ways that people are gardening. Again, taking abandoned lots and creating, you know, a garden. And they don't have to be big spaces. They really can
right.
be pop-ups. And to your point about, you know, rooftop gardens, we are seeing more of those. And it may even be, you know, school gardens, whatever the case is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people want a garden, they're going to find a way.
Oh, I think every school should have a garden, in my opinion. I really do. One last point here. So basically with community gardens, because I believe that every unit. We have neighborhood associations, and I believe every sector, every unit that you want to say that's split up in your town, I believe every one of those should have it too, whether they have money or whether they don't have money. They definitely should have a community garden of some sort to build up community in their area. But also to have the mission to help so many other people that need the help, like veterans, single moms, seniors. Seniors, that's going to be a big poverty group that's coming up. What do you see that companies, and I'm trying to create a synergy this year by getting more people involved with community gardens and thinking that, hey, you know, I could help out more with this too. What do you see that's coming up, or how do you see that more companies can pitch in and be a part of this food movement, if you will, that maybe there's still those unplugged areas? What do you think that companies can do, or how they can access more groups to get more interest in growing food? I'm afraid that we're going to have a grid problem one day, and someone's going to be caught with no food. So what do you see, or have you all thought about, or have you all kind of looked, you know, down the road to kind of see that, hey, companies maybe are starting to align a little bit better together and trying to improve the situation about more community gardens? Of course, that presents farmers markets, food hubs, other food systems. What do you see?
We are seeing a lot of different groups, whether they're corporations, nonprofits, civic organizations, working together to do just as you said, provide food to those who are really in need. With our Grow 1000 program, through our partnership with the Garden Writers Association and Plant a Row for the Hungry, that's a very strong component of each of our grants, being able to provide those in need in the community surplus produce. So we're usually working with areas of a city that is in high need, underserved. So right there, we're helping the local residents, and then also giving access to that food pantry, to that church group. But the beauty of the Grow 1000 program for us is, you know, when we go to a new city, and we're able to bring in other corporations and other partner groups to really help the program even expand more. And so it has more traction, and you just are bringing more resources to that nonprofit group. So
we
definitely see that happening, and I think that definitely is going to continue. And that really, isn't that the essence of community gardening? You know, you start something and you have more groups who are just, you know, getting involved, because it's about sharing, you know, sharing produce, sharing food, but also sharing ideas, sharing, you know, this might be a better way to grow something, and just bridging a lot of you know, cultural gaps too. We've worked with many groups, you know, who are, they may be focusing on, say, an immigrant population, and they are coming, you know, to the United States, and, you know, they're growing produce that, you know, may have been native to their home country, but they're growing it here in the United States, in their new home.
I like that idea.
And they're teaching those growing techniques, you know, to their neighbors. And it's also just multi-generational too. That's another trend we're seeing. It's young people, it's millennials, it's, you know, the boomers all working together to grow something healthy to eat. It's just
cool. And getting back to the basics. That's what I like, getting back to the basics. Well, we appreciate your time today, and this has been on the Pollinator Promise program, and it's at www.scottsmiraclegrow.com. /Pollinator Promise, and I'm going to say that again for you, www.scottsmiraclegrow.com/Pollinator Promise, and they want you to just communicate with them through the website only to fill out your grant application, and just go ahead and talk to them through that only, please. And we've been talking with the Scotts Miraclegrow Company folks, and this is Sue Locke, who is the Director of Corporate and Community Partnerships. They're in Marysville, Ohio. And Sue, I appreciate your time each year when you're telling us about these wonderful grant programs that you have available for folks, because it's all about money and the volunteers to these folks. And that's how they can make it sustainable, is find that money, find those volunteers. And so any kind of help that you all have done and other companies, we do appreciate it, because without you, we couldn't get as far in community gardens in the nation as we are. So I do appreciate you what help you all have done, and also that you've come to talk with us today. It's my honor and pleasure, and always a joy to talk to the Scotts and Miracle-Gro folks. So you have a great day, gal, and good talking to you again this year.
Okay, anytime, Mary. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. We appreciate it. And you've been listening to Community Garden Revolution. I'm Mary Huckel, the show host. Thanks very much for listening today. Have a great Community Garden Day. Thank you. Appreciate it, gal.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.